and this is Ms. G bringing you Telling Tales here tonight at KTO 104.3. Hopefully you enjoyed that little piece of music. It's nice and meditative. Tonight's story is pretty short, but that's because I have some more poems to give you for tonight, so hopefully you're in the mood for that. Tonight's story is called See the Other Side with Tatiana Tostolia. A hot day in May in Ravenna, the small Italian city where Dante is buried. Once upon a time, right at the start of the 5th century AD, the Emperor Honorius transferred the capital of the Western Roman Empire to this city. There was a port here then, but the sea has since receded, and in its place are swamps, roses, dust, and vineyards. Ravenna is famous for its mosaics. Hordes of tourists move from one church to another, craning their necks to glimpse the dim luster of tiny multicolored smalti high up under dusky vaults. It is possible to make out something in those vaults, but not very much. The glossy postcards, though terribly bright, flat, and cheap-looking, will give you a better view. I'm suffocating and hot. I'm depressed. My father died, and I loved him so much. Once, long, long ago, almost 40 years back, he passed through Ravenna and sent me a postcard of one of these famous mosaics. On the back, in pencil, for some reason, he must have been in a hurry. He wrote, "Sweetheart, I have never seen anything so sublime. See the other side in my life. Makes you want to cry. Oh, if only you were here. Your father." Each sentence ends with a silly exclamation point. He was young. He was cheerful. Maybe he'd had a glass of wine. I can see him with his felt hat cocked in the manner of the late 50s, a cigarette between his white teeth, which were still his own then. Beads of sweat on his forehead. Tall, slim, handsome. His eyes shine happily behind the glass circles of his spectacles. The postcard, which he dropped in a mailbox lightheartedly, entrusting it to two unreliable postal services, the Italian and the Russian, depicts heaven. The Lord sits amid a blindingly green paradise of eternal spring, white sheep grazing all around. Those two unreliable postal services had bent the corners of the postcard, but it didn't matter. The message was received and everything could be seen. If heaven exists, then my father is there now. Where else would he be? The only thing is, he died. He died and he doesn't write me postcards with exclamation points anymore. He no longer sends tidings from all parts of the globe. I'm here. I love you. Do you love me? Do you share my pleasure and my joy? Do you see the beauty that I see? Greetings. Here's a postcard. Here's a cheap, glossy photograph. I was here. It's wonderful. Only if only you could be here too. He traveled all over the world. He liked the world. Now, as much as I can, I follow in his footsteps. I go to the same towns and see them through his eyes. Try to imagine him young, turning that corner, climbing those steps, leaning on the railing of the embankment with a cigarette between his teeth. This time, I'm in Ravenna, a stuffy, exhausting place. It's dead, like all tourist destinations where crowds fill narrow streets. It's a dead, hollow, hot town with no place to sit down. The tomb of Dante, exiled from his native Florence. The tomb of Theodorich. The mausoleum of Galla Placidia, sister of Flavius Honorius. The very man who made Ravenna the capital of the Western Empire. 15 centuries passed. Everything changed. dust gathered, the mosaics crumbled. What was once important is now unimportant. What once excited has vanished in the sands. The sea itself has receded, and where merry green waves once splashed, there are wastelands, vineyards, silence. 40 years, a whole lifetime ago, my father strolled and laughed here. His myopic eyes squinted. He sat at a sidewalk table, drank red wine, and tore off bits of pizza with his own strong teeth. The dark blue night fell, and on a postcard balanced on the edge of the table in pencil, he scribbled a few hurried words to me, scattering exclamation points and expressing his delight and his love for the world. The overcast sky is stifling. It's hot, but the sun can't be seen. Dust is everywhere. Land that was once at the bottom of the sea now lies around the town in wide, fertile fields. Where crabs once crawled, donkeys pick their way. In place of seaweed, roses grow. Everything has gone to seed. Along the once splendid streets of the capital of the Western world, disappointed American tourists in pink sweatshirts wander, unhappy that the travel agency has tricked them yet again. Everything in Europe is so dinky, so small, so old. 14 centuries. No, 15 centuries. Dante's grave, the tomb of Galla Placidia, my father's grave. Some sort of naive green paradise on a crumpled postcard. What was it that so amazed him here? I find the white church. I look up. Yes, there's something green there, high up under the vault. White sheep on a green meadow. The usual dim light. The discordant hum of tourists below. Their fingers point. They look for explanations in their guidebooks, such and such a century, such and such a style. Everything is the same everywhere, always. You can hardly see. In every Italian church, there's a box on the wall for donations, and for those who are interested, these boxes often provide an additional service. If you put in 300 lira, 25 cents, for a brief moment, spotlights are turned on near the ceiling, bathing the stones of the mosaic in fresh white light. The colors brighten. You can see details. The crowd gets excited. Its hum grows louder. Only 25 cents. You've already come so far. You've paid for the plane ticket, for the train, the hotel, the pizza, the cold drinks, the coffee. How can you now begrudge a few extra cents? But many do. They're annoyed. They weren't forewarned. They want to see heaven for free. They wait around for some other generous, impatient person to deposit a coin in the slot of that swindling Italian apparatus. All Italians are swindlers, isn't that right? Then the spotlights flare, and for a moment too short for the human eye to adjust. Paradise is greener, the sheep more innocent, the Lord kinder. And then the lights go off, and the din of the tourists turns from a momentary grumble of protest to a greedy growl to whispered disappointment. Once again, everything is immersed in gloom. I wander from church to church along with the crowd. I listen to its muffled multilingual murmur, like the rush of the sea. A slow human whirlpool spins me around, and tired, empty faces flash by as empty as my own. Eyeglasses glint. The pages of guidebooks rustle. I squeeze through the narrow doors of churches, push past my neighbors, trying like everyone else to get a better view, trying not to become irritated. After all, I think, if heaven does exist, it's likely that I'll enter it with just such a flock of sheep. Of people. Old, not all that smart, a bit greedy. Because if heaven isn't for people like us, then who is it for, I'd like to know? Are there really so many others? Special people? People who are noticeably better than us ordinary, statistically average souls? No, there aren't. So in all likelihood, I will have to plod across those green meadows with a herd of American tourists, disgruntled that everything is so ancient and small, And if that is the case, then heaven must be awful and boring, which by definition seems wrong. Everything in heaven should be utterly sublime. I have never seen anything so sublime. See the other side in my life, my father wrote. See the other side, an ordinary paradise. What did he see that I don't see? I squeezed into a small building of which the early 20th century Russian traveler Pavel Muratov wrote in his famous book, Images of Italy. The blue of the ceiling of the mausoleum of Galla Placidia is unusually dark and deep, almost inscrutably so. Depending on the light penetrating through the small windows, it will shimmer in a wonderful and unexpectedly marvelous manner with a greenish lilac or crimson hue. It is against this background that the famous depiction of the youthful good shepherd sitting among snow-white sheep is placed. The half circles near the windows are decorated with a large ornamental motif of deer drinking from a spring. Garlands of fruit and leaves wind along the lower arches. On viewing their magnificent, one cannot help but think that never has mankind arrived at a more satisfactory solution to the problem of decorating a church wall. Owing to the small size of the mausoleum chapel, the mosaics do not create the impression of vain, cold pomp. The air surrounding their sarcophagus, shining with the blue fire of the mosaics which once contained the embalmed body of the empress, is a worthy dream of an ardently religious imagination. Was this not what the artists of stained glass in the Gothic cathedral strove to achieve, only in a different way? Marvelous words. But having pushed my way into the chapel, I can't see anything. Perhaps Muratov's guide illuminated the church with a torch, but now it's simply dark in here. And whatever scant light makes its way through the windows is blocked by tourists' backs. The crowd stands dense and stubborn, elbow to elbow. We need to put some coins into the light box, but no one is in a hurry. Everyone is waiting for someone else to do it. I'm in no hurry either. I've put coins in many times, my internal voice says. Let someone else do it this time. A minute passes in the stuffy dark. Another minute, each of us thinks I won't give in. The darkness presses on our heads. It smells like mice, mold, and something else, too, something very old, as though time itself had an odor. Then the human smells come through. Aging flesh, perfume, breath mints, sweat, tobacco. This is how it will be right after death. There will be the sound of others breathing and sniffing in the dark, heat, anticipation, a subtle hostility towards one's fellow travelers, a polite decision not to show this hostility, egotism, stubbornness, hope, doubt. The waiting room for heaven, where else is there to go? I have never seen anything so sublime. See the other side in my life makes you want to cry. My father wrote from paradise. Finally, the familiar click resounds. Someone has taken the plunge. The lights come on. For a brief moment, the briefest moment, the eye doesn't have time to take it all in. The eye casts about. The dull, hot darkness overhead becomes a starry sky, a dark blue cupola with huge, shimmering stars that seem startlingly close. Ah, comes the sound from below, and then the light goes out. And again there's darkness, darker even than before. And again the click, and the fantastic multicolored stars, like spinning Ferris wheels in that very same air, shining with the blue fire, a momentary vision, and again gloom. And again the clatter of a falling coin, followed by the click, the glorious vision, don't go, stay with us. And again the blow of darkness. The sinners stand as though enchanted, their faces lifted. A path has opened in the darkness. A promise has been made. Evidence has been presented. All will be saved. No explanations necessary. The magical dark blue abyss raised above us by a nameless artist speaks for itself, sings in a wordless language. The blue flows down toward the garlands of fruit and leaves. Everything disappears. But again and again, the lights flash on. The fete is endless, and any minute now, the angels will begin to sing, "Let there be light." I squeeze carefully through the crowd. I want to see the insatiable being who has mounted these fireworks, who has rolled back the walls of the sepulchre with light. He sits in a wheelchair, his face lowered. There's a box of coins in his lap. His hand gropes for one and sticks it into the slot, and while the blue is tinted with lilac and crimson fire, a female guide hurriedly whispers in his ear words that I can't make out, and that even if I could, I wouldn't understand. I don't know this language. The man is blind. He has the reserved and patient expression of all blind people. His eyelids are closed, his head bowed, his ear bent toward his companion. What is she to him? The daughter, wife, or simply someone hired to accompany him on his travels? He listens to her whisper and occasionally nods his head. Yes, yes. He wants to hear more. He puts in coin after coin. He throws coins into the darkness, and from the darkness sounds a voice that tells him as much as it is possible about the great comfort of beauty. He listens his fill, nods and smiles. Then the woman deftly wheels his chair through the crowd and out of the mausoleum. People look at them. He doesn't care, and she's probably used to it. The chair bounces along the cobblestones of the square, affording the blind man a little additional suffering. A light rain drips from the clouds, but soon stops. See the other side. But there's nothing on the other side. On the other side, there's only darkness, heat, silence, irritation, doubt, dejection. On the other side, there's the depiction, worn with age, of something that was important long, long ago, but not to me. Makes you want to cry, Father wrote, 40 years ago, of the beauty that struck him then, and perhaps of something greater as well. I want to cry, because he no longer exists. I don't know where he has gone, and all that's left of him is a mountain of papers and this postcard of a green heaven, which I move from volume to volume like a bookmark. But maybe that is not the way things are. Maybe everything was calculated long ago, a plan laid out that has now only become an effect. An anonymous Byzantine master, inspired by faith, imagined the beauty of the Lord's garden. He expressed it in his language as well as he could. Perhaps he was even frustrated that he didn't have the skill to do more. Centuries passed. My father arrived in Ravenna, lifted his head, saw the vision of Eden, bought a cheap little picture of the picture, and sent it to me with love, fortified by exclamation points. Everyone chooses his own language. And if he hadn't sent it, I wouldn't have come here. I wouldn't have come to this dark chapel. I wouldn't have encountered the blind man. I wouldn't have seen how, with a wave of his hand, the blue light of heaven's threshold could flare on the other side of darkness. Because we are just as blind. No, 1,000 times blinder than that old man in the wheelchair. We hear whispers, but we plug our ears. We are shown, but we turn away. We have no faith. We're afraid to believe because we're afraid that we'll be deceived. We are certain that we're in the tomb. We are certain that there's nothing in the dark. There can't be anything in the dark. The blind man and his guide move away down the narrow streets of the small dead town. The woman pushes the chair and says something, bending down toward the blind man's ear, and no doubt she falters, chooses her words, words that I would never choose. He laughs at something, and she straightens his collar. She adds coins to the box in his lap. then goes into a tavern and brings out a slice of pizza. He eats gratefully, messily, his hands touching the invisible, marvelous food in the darkness. That was See the Other Side by Tatiana Tolstoya, and it was translated from Russian by Jamie Gabrell. This is Ms. G. I bring you Telling Tales here tonight, here at 104.3 Juneau, Alaska, KTOO. I'll be right back. Still bringing Telling Tales here tonight at KTOO. And I hope you enjoyed that last story. That was fun. So I have two poems here that I borrowed from two really good poets that I met online. And I told them about my show, and they said, yes, I could use their poems. And so I hope you enjoy these two. This first one is by Nicholas Bagby. And it's called Karma. How does it feel to be the one played a fool? How does it feel to finally be used like a tool? I used to be a good person. I used to feel bad. Your situations would make me sad. But time has robbed me of a certain innocence. And now I laugh at the fact that now you know why I act the way I act. He used you like you used me, lied to you, and was too blind to see. Now you're stung by the same bittersweet bee. I know that it's wrong of me, but I can't help but feel a little glee. Karma's such a maniacal witch, and though it was never my wish, she served you your own dish. That was Nicholas Bagby's Karma. Thanks, Nick. I have another poem by one of the authors I met online. This one is called Sea Dog by Blue-Eyed Bola. Not kidding, that's his name. I'll follow yon stream down south toward the shore. Just go with the flow to the sea. I'll take myself off to hide my head's hurt. Become someone else instead of me. We'll dream and deny the pain I can't cry. Sue soul in my boat by the bay. I'll take the high tide, lift anchor and glide. Steal stillness and stow it away. Rub salt in my wounds and watch them all heal. Old sea dog had taught me that ruse. Make coastline my home. Inland will not roam. We'll take up again with my muse. And when the dawn breaks, comes casting its spell, a new man you'll see on the beach. A seafaring rogue, a jack-tar so bold, with heart that bad, love cannot reach. It was Sea Dog by Blue-Eyed Bola. Okay, let me take a little break, and I'll be right back. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G. Hope you're enjoying the show here at 104.3 KTOO in Juneau, Alaska. we have just enough time for one more poem. This is by our own local, Christy Nami Erickson, off of her CD, How to Tell If a Korean Woman Loves You. And this is titled, The Most Beautiful Women in the World. Hope you like it.
My legs and their legs were mazes to a hard bass on the dance floor. Chris dared three of us to kiss him at once, and our tongues were so empty, they learned anyone's language. I watched John eat a hot dog, and it was disgusting. Mustard on his chin, words and relish falling out of his mouth. Later he took my shirt off, so hungry, and I stood there, cold hands and tender loins. Ryan told me he didn't like me, but would sleep with me, and we did that for years. Some nights I held him. They are whistling. They are talking about us, grabbing at our hips, placing their names on our lips. They shove lines into our face like sweaty bouquets. Asian women are the most beautiful women in the world, they say. And I was so proud that I wore my skin like a drink. Let them throw me back, call me smooth. For a time, I could have been anyone's granddaughter. I could swing on a bell on a mountain of prayers. I could shave my head and sprinkle pieces of my midnight all over Korea like a trail, like a bad joke. I could bear the name of a prescription drug and my ancestors would never feel the pain. I could swallow the Pacific mile by raging mile and spit in my mother's kimchi because that's what happens to your insides when you accidentally see what they see when they look at you.
I hope you enjoyed that. That was by Christy Nami Erickson, The Most Beautiful Women in the World. This has been Telling Tales with Ms. G. Until next time, good night.